acceleration during that abort procedure. WS2N with the space report, K2RIW.
Okay, Dick. This is WS2N for the space net report for TechNet. And yes, well, I think 7 G's, it was a lot less than what would have been a bigger problem if they were coming back from orbit. They never made it to orbit. You would have been traveling a lot faster and come through a ballistic reentry, which has happened once before. I think they got up to almost 10 G's. So, but, both people got back okay. Both Nick Hague and the Russian, Alex Ovechkin. There were only two people on board. This time they were just sending up two instead of the normal three. And there's three on board right now. And they were supposed to join them 6 hours after lunch. And, of course, that didn't happen. It turns out what happened was they launched successfully. And they got up to roughly 30 miles high and a couple of thousand miles per hour when the separation of the boosters took place. There's four boosters surrounding the Soyuz, and they separated exactly the same time. And then the main central core booster takes over. And then there's a third one that would go on later to push the spacecraft to orbit. So they got as far as the boosters dropped.
Repeater, timeout.
Timed out already. Okay. Nevertheless, the launch place Thursday at 4, roughly 4:40 in the morning. We're too early for me to watch. Normally I would watch these things. They took off from Kazakhstan, and they wound up a couple of hundred miles away from where they took off. So I did hear it about 2 hours after it happened, so it was still unfolding. And one of the websites I go to, wasn't NASA, it was another one, had the video up of the launch and long-range cameras and the audio. And it was very interesting to listen to it, and I made a quick couple-minute recording. So let me just play it, and then you can understand when you got to the end why I knew right away there was a problem, and yet NASA, your voice at NASA, did not know there was a problem. Let me drop it. You could hear two voices talking. One was the translation voice from Moscow of, communications between the Russian cosmonaut and Moscow. And then a louder voice, which was a voice from NASA. So let me drop it. What I'm going to do is just play it, and I'll unkey it once. Looks like there's a short timeout on this computer, and I might not make it. Let me just play this. Let me drop it. It goes from liftoff until that roughly 2 minute problem when everything went down the drain.
7-6, this is by Elizabeth 4-3-2-1. Engines are from functional and will be placed. The engine is about to start liftoff, and there is liftoff of the Soyuz MS-10 to the International Space Station carrying Nick Hague and Alexei Ovchinin to the orbital complex. Again, Nick Hague's first. burning liquid fuel for the first 2 minutes and 6 seconds of flight.
About 1 minute left.
Do you hear the thunder inside? As I assume, the human weight of the space is rotating there at the top of the screen, and like the ship at the bottom. There's one of our flights approaching the ship. Over. Where do you deploy to the well, Bobby? Do you hear the Soyuz making its way into space? Is everything looking good? Proceeding normally? Inaudible. And we have escape tower for Soyuz now jettisoned. Is everything continuing normally? Four Strap-on visitors have been jettisoned and they've completed their job. Drops away at an altitude of 28 statute miles. Soyuz traveling about 3,350 miles an hour.
Liquid fuel, kerosene burning. that are attached to the bottom of the spacecraft. They separate exactly at the same time and fall away from the spacecraft. Apparently, one of these boosters did not separate properly and damaged the central core. The second that got damaged, it triggered an automatic abort. Meanwhile, the launch abort system that solid booster rocket that's attached on the top of the space on the top of the rocket that would pull the spacecraft away was already jettisoned. You could hear on a recording it was jettisoned. So they have a backup system. In other words, going all the way to orbit, which they were going about 3,000 miles an hour, until they get to orbit, for the next minute or so anyway. They have the bearings, the covering around the Soyuz spacecraft. Near the very top of the covering, they have their own solid booster, rockets. There's four of them. They're the rockets that fired and pulled the orbital section and the descent section away and left the service module behind. And then right after that, the fairing separates. The orbital module also separates, leaving the descent module, and that comes back down through the atmosphere. Open up the parachutes, and as it was doing that, it started transmitting the CW on 8 megahertz, precisely 8.364 megahertz. That's the descent. So that's the story. They're working on the problem. They don't know why this one booster didn't separate properly, so they have to work that problem out and try to get everything squared away, because they do have a launch scheduled for December for another crew. Whether or not that happens, but when things are delayed, we don't know. At the end of the month, there's also a Progress craft that's going to go up. It's the same kind of rocket. The only difference is it doesn't have a crew. It just has cargo. So let's see if anybody has any questions about this before I go on. This is WS-1. So playing that anyway was kind of like legal anyway, because Nick Hegg happens to be a ham. He's the American astronaut that was on board KG-5 TMB. Never made it up there. His first flight. The Russian, it was his second flight. They were supposed to make it there in 6 hours, and they were going to stay on board for almost 6 months. And now it looks like they're talking about sending them, when I say them, those two fellows back up again in April. That's what the Russians are hoping to do. But meanwhile, there's other flights that are planned for that time frame. So whether or not those people are going to get pushed back, and they're going to find themselves, with a scheduling nightmare, I guess. But first things first, they have to get the information back to figure out exactly what went wrong. And Russia says they're not going to send any other crew up there until they do figure this out. And any questions? On board the ISS, we still have three people. The German was actually the commander of the three that are up there. Alexander Gerst, one. The other one is the American doctor, Serena Anon, and the Russian pilot or commander of the Soyuz spacecraft that still is attached to the International Space Station. On top of everything else, that thing has a hole in it. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago, a month or so ago. Found a little hole in there, and they managed to epoxy it, stop it from leaking, and they know it was drilled out by somebody, most likely on the ground, either by accident or on purpose. So here they have a damaged spacecraft attached to the International Space Station, one that can't make it up there, and possible delays until they figure out what they're exactly going to do. Do have enough food and supplies up there for the three that are on board. The problem with that is they went up a couple months ago. They're scheduled to come back in December. They'll probably spend their stay on the International Space Station maybe until January. They can't go much beyond that because Soyuz spacecraft has a 200-day limit. One reason for is for the batteries. The batteries tend to eventually wear out. They keep recharging them. That is the time limit on the spacecraft. As well as the fuel, the hydrazine fuel, they don't like to leave that on board the spacecraft for too many days because they're afraid that eventually it might start digging into some of the joint, very corrosive fuel. What they can do is actually send another spacecraft up without a crew. It's all autonomous anyway. You could dock with the International Space Station, and instantaneously the crew that's up there would have another 6 months to stay on board if they, if they had to. That would be the worst case scenario. What's going to suffer is the science. There's a lot of science being done. There's, I think, over 300 experiments that have taken place on the space station at this time. And although about half of the experiments are done by mission control, either here or in Germany or even in Moscow. They're controlled by ground control. And the other 50%, other 150 more experiments, you need people on board to take care of these ongoing experiments. So that's the story on this disaster. Last week we were watching a successful flight from California that took off and sent the spacecraft into orbit by SpaceX. It was a Falcon 9. It was a iteration of the Falcon 9 called the Block 5. And it was the first time it took off and landed back in California, back in about 1,400 feet away from where it took off in Vandenberg, California. So that was pretty exciting. We got to watch that live here on the net. Went from one successful space story to not so successful space story in Russia. But what worked good was the launch abort system. Been used a couple of times before. Launch abort system, a couple of things. One is the main one that's attached to the top of the rocket in case there's a problem on the launch pad and the rocket blows up. Launch abort system would ignite, pull the spacecraft away from the rocket. The Russians had that problem back in 1983. That exact problem, it worked out. It saved that two-person crew that was on board that Soyuz rocket. And then the other part of the system is these rockets that are located in the fairing. So once the launch abort system is jettisoned, to do that, they actually have other little rockets that pull the solid booster rocket away from the spacecraft. And once that happens, four other rockets that are attached to the fairing take over all the way uphill. Once they get to a certain height and that fairing is jettisoned, the remaining part of the launch abort system is the Soyuz spacecraft itself. The service module has all these thrusters, and what would happen is there was an emergency at that point, let's say between spacecraft and the third stage, rockets would fire and pull themselves away from the third stage, and they would go on to the International Space Station. They would dock and everything would be fine. But, those three individual scenarios have all now been used. Once back in 1983, when they had an abort on the ground. Another time was another one back in 1975 where the Soyuz was to the point of, directly to orbit, not in the the International Space Station wasn't up there at the time, but they were going up to up here. And they used the Soyuz service module rockets to escape the problem. And now, in a third part, they actually used the rockets on the ferry to get away. This is WS. Okay, now, other problems with the space industry. It's been a tough week on both sides, Russia and with the United States. We've had a problem with the Hubble. Hubble has had another gyro failure. They're down to just two gyros. There's a total of six. The last service mission to the Hubble back in 2009, I think it was, they replaced six gyros. What happened was over time they thought they failed. They're down to three. They can do everything they need to do with three. They really have six for redundancy. Over time, since 2009, one failed, another one failed, and now they're down to three. And then just last week, another one failed. Now they're down to two. So this could be bad news for Hubble. They believe they could do a lot of science, even if they get down to one. And they might, you know, work around this problem. But sooner or later, you know, the last gyro is going to fail, and that would be the end of the Hubble. They were trying to keep the Hubble running until the James Webb Space Telescope got launched in 2021, a couple years from now. That thing should have been up there by now, but delay after delay. Hubble has its problems. Not to be outdone, NASA has had another problem with the Chandra Space Telescope. Chandra is one that looks at the X-ray environment, looks at black holes. Been doing a lot of work since Columbia launched it back in, I believe that was 1990-ish. So it now has had another problem very similar to Hubble. One of the gyros has failed on that thing now. So it's just a coincidence. Two of the main telescopes that NASA really loves and got used to, Hubble and Chandra, both are now having problems. So with that, we do have another launch coming up, and hopefully this one will be a successful one. It's called the ICON, Ionosphere Connection Explorer. Both launched a couple of months ago, but unable to do so. Supposed to launch from Kwajalein Island out in the Pacific Ocean. But it had problems with the with one of the fins. ICON is going to, that's what they call ICON, is going to launch from a Pegasus rocket. Pegasus rocket launches from the bottom of a Lockheed L-1011. It's actually a jumbo jet that really isn't used anymore, but NASA still uses this, and used it about like 40 or 5 launches, I think, over the last 20 years with the Pegasus rocket. This time, when they were flying the ICON out to Kwajalein a few months ago, they were getting telemetry back from one of the actuators on board the Pegasus rocket. Something was wrong. It was showing that it had moved. Meanwhile, it was supposed to be in place. So they just turned the jet around and brought it all the way back to California. And finally resolved the problem. It was a bad controller that controlled the spin on the Pegasus rocket. So they picked that up, and they set another launch date, and that's supposed to go up, I think, around 10 or 12 days from now. I think it's the 22nd of October. So I'll be able to talk about it one more time next week, I think, unless there's another delay, but probably not. Now, this time they're going to launch it from Florida. Yeah, L-10-11 is going to take off, go over the Pacific, and they're going to drop the Pegasus rocket to send Icon into space. So hopefully they get that thing up there. The Icon is going to study the ionosphere, which is interesting for him anyway. And if all goes well, that should be up and running inside of a couple of weeks. A lot of people wondering why not do this in the first place? Why go out to the Pacific Ocean in the middle of the Pacific Ocean to Kwajalein? And the reason for it is, at the time, they weren't sure exactly how heavy the Icon was going to be. They thought it was going to be a little heavier. And by going out to Kwajalein, it's right near the equator, and they get a little bit more push from the equator than they do from Florida. So they decided to do it that way. Then as the development of Icon was realized, they realized it didn't weigh what they thought it was going to weigh. So they were able to take the second choice and launch from Florida. Meanwhile, the manifest, was built in Florida, and they could only control so many rockets per month. They had date sets, and they went out to the Pacific. Turns out it didn't work out anyway. The controller was bad and not controlling the fin on the Pegasus rocket. So they brought it back. And now it's ready to go again. So that should be good. It's going to work in conjunction with another satellite that's in a geosynchronous orbit called GOLD, GOLD satellite. They're going to be both looking at the ionosphere at the same time, studying and trying to figure out the things that, as far as I'm concerned, that ham radio people should be interested in. All the hams should be wondering about the ionosphere. If you're into low band, that's the story on that. Let me drop it, see if there's any questions. One more topic for now. Virgin Galactic, company run by Richard Branson, talked about this thing many times, has the Spaceship 2. And over the years, they've been trying to perfect it. The goal is to eventually be able to send two pilots and six passengers on suborbital flight. Richard Branson said a few days ago that they expect this spacecraft to be able to get into space within a couple of weeks. Each month or so, they run another test, and they've gotten to the point where they broke the sound barrier. They've gotten up pretty high, like 30 miles, but they need to get up to the equivalent of 60 miles to officially get into space. They want to get above the Kármán line. The Kármán line is 100 kilometers. So he thinks within a matter of weeks, not months, crew will be able to do that. And he thinks soon after that, within a couple of months, he'll be able to put passengers on board, take a flight up. And he intends to be like one of the first people to do this, get on board, and he officially wants to become an astronaut. If you get above the Kármán line, you qualify. This billionaire is going to stick his neck out and get on this rocket he's been trying to build for I don't know how many years. First one, the Spaceship 2 version, crashed, I think, back in 2012, and he's been working on this one ever since. So we'll see how he does. You have a new price or fee price for getting onto this rocket. And it's going to be roughly about the same if you want to get on to the New Shepard, which is also a suborbital flight rocket. That's going to be probably going up maybe toward the end of the year or January. Shepard rocket, actually, it takes off like a rocket. You come back on a parachute. This thing goes up like an airplane off a runway. Comes back and lands on a runway. When I say this thing, I mean Spaceship 2. If you had $250,000, you could turn it over to Richard Branson to get a ticket. Problem is you can't buy one now because he's backlogged the last couple of years. People have reservations to go with 600 people. It's going to take a long time to get through that group. He does have other spaceships he's building that if this one is successful, he'll be able to do multiple flights and get many, many people their astronaut wings. We'll see how Richard Branson does with this thing in a couple of, maybe a couple of months. We'll see the actors. They'll be taking off from Spaceport America. That's a spaceport built in New Mexico, countless acres, and that's where his home is set up for this thing, where people will be flying out of. Initial flight test, though, I think will be taking place from California. But I like this spaceport that they built. There's a couple of companies in there, Exospace. They've launched a couple of suborbital rockets. U.S. Space, they're involved with launching rockets. Very small company, but it's built to handle almost anything. And that was a gamble that New Mexico taxpayers really funded probably 20 years ago or so. They thought that by now that, you know, the spaceport would have been used on a regular basis. It's only just starting to get a couple of flights here and there. So that's the deal with the spaceport, with Richard Branson. Does anybody have any questions or comments for the SpaceNet report? For the TechNet, this is WS2N. Okay, no other comments. I don't have anything else to discuss. Back to past things that we never covered. But I think that's about it. Dick, you want to take it, or what do you want to do here? This is WS2N.
That's your choice, Paul. You can either go to some other item if you want to, or we can finish early. There's nothing magic about going exactly to midnight. Many of us have got to get up tomorrow morning, so we could end a little early. Choice is yours, Paul. WS2N, K2RIW.
Well, that's fine with me. You know, that's okay. We covered most of the topics that I wanted to get to. In fact, probably all of them. There was a couple a week or two ago and I wanted to cover, but I don't have it available right now. I'll be looking for the Icon flight in 2 weeks. And there's a couple of foreign flights. You know, China's always launching something. Nothing really stands out. So that's pretty much it. Dick, we'll end early, and I'll say 73 to you, Roy. Pleasure as always, and everybody else listening. This is WS2N. Back to you, Dick.
Okay, thank you, Paul. What you guys heard was TechNet number 1719. Pretty big number. You just heard Space Report number 319. And Science Talk number 48. If I got that right, let me think. We'll check here. Yeah, that's what I think it is. So, 73 you all. We intend to be back next week. And bye bye for now. K2RIW, TechNet Limelight, we're clear.
Welcome to the WQVL repeater. The time is 12:04 a.m. 73, and good night from the WQVL repeater. Thank you. tonight at 8:30. This is the WQVL Amateur Radio Repeater System. at 8:30. This is the WQVL Amateur Radio Repeater System. Tonight at 8:30, WQVL Repeater System.